The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to John. Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and he saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many people?" Jesus said, "Make them sit down." Now there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw that the sign he had done, they began to say, "This indeed is the prophet who is to come into the world." When Jesus realized that they were about to make him and come by force to make him king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into the boat, and started across the Sea of Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed for 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they wanted to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the land toward which they were going. The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated for a moment. We are now entering a very interesting time of the church year, which is called the Bread of Life series, which means that for the next 5 weeks, we're going to be reading this chapter 6 that we just started today. And it's a very important part of our learning and experiencing together. And some may say, "Well, why do we need 5 weeks of this? It's like Christmas, we have 7 weeks of, you know, he's risen, or he's alive." And we have certain things that we repeat over and over and over. And really, for a preacher, it's a real challenge because, you know, how do you squeeze the text so much to get something out of it, right? But the idea is that there's so much misunderstanding about the central truth about Jesus being the bread of life that we need to see it from very, very different aspects. We need to see it as though one would look at a diamond from the many different sides to see the brilliance and to see its depth. And so today we're looking at it, beginning with John. John, of course, is a very interesting fellow. He's not like the synoptics, Mark, Matthew, and Luke, which are all different writers, but they all have something very much in common in the way they write, because they use each other in a certain way to embellish the stories. But John has his unique understanding of Jesus. He has his own perspective of Jesus. In the gospel of Jesus, Jesus does not have to prove that he is the man, that he is God himself. He is. And he walks and he acts and he talks right through the gospel with that sense of confidence and that sense of presence that when he does things, one is shaken to their very foundation. And so you hear Jesus say, "I am." In other words, "I am." In other words, there's no other being than Jesus. There's no other reality than Jesus. And what he does is, in the particular gospel that we read, John, he offers signs. Now, we know that we use signs when we go in the car, we're driving through the city and all that. The sign says, "Make a right," or "No U-turn," or, you know, "You could turn red on, right on red," and that kind of stuff. But signs help us to see things. And so the gospel of John has signs. And these signs are supposed to help his disciples as well as us to see what Jesus is attempting to do. But what we realize today in this particular Bread of Life series is that they don't get the sign right. They get confused and they misunderstand the sign. And one of the signs is there, of course, is that when Jesus is finally sitting everybody down, he himself, now this you don't find in the other gospel, Jesus himself will go and feed the people. That's very different than Matthew, Mark, and Luke, where Jesus has his disciples feed the people. Jesus makes them sit down and Jesus feeds them, which shows a level of intimacy that you don't get out of the synoptics, a level of real participation from Jesus' side with his people, an intimacy, a sense of community, a sense of wholeness that you don't get so much, let's say, in the other particular gospels. So Jesus feeds them. And because he fed them barley. The barley loaves that the kid brought, remember those five barley loaves and two fish? Now this barley loaf is probably the most humble piece of bread you can ever have. It is the bread of the poor. Barley was the one thing that the poor people were able to eat all the time because they didn't have no Italian breads. Okay, they didn't have no French, you know, ciambatto, you know, all the rye breads or the wheat barley, you know, any of that. So they had just barley bread, simple. And so he feeds the people. It's a simple meal. And all of them eat and all of them are satisfied and all of them have leftovers. And then what do? They say to themselves, you know, this guy's not bad, you know. We can have him around, we'll chain him to the basement, and every so often we'll tell him, hey, produce some bread, and we're going to have bread. Or why not make wine? Maybe we can produce wine. But we'll have him at our command. We'll have him at our service. We can make him do what we want if we make him king. And so we're going to take him, and now we're going to take possession of him so that we can have what we want all the time. This is where they misunderstood. This is where they get confused, because Jesus is not about just giving you the food. He's about teaching you. He's about opening up your understanding. He's about creating a community of otherness and people where people can celebrate and share and participate in a life that many other people weren't able to do. So this is a sign that they misunderstand because they figured if we get Jesus, we can always have food. And let's not, you know, belittle the fact that people were hungry. People needed food. We all need food. But what we need more than food is meaning. What we need more than food is a sense of purpose in our lives. What we need more than food is a sense of commitment to something that is real and good and honest. And this is where the sign was misunderstood, because Jesus was not only giving bread, he was trying to give direction, he was trying to give meaning and purpose so that the people can see what their lives could mean, what they can invest themselves into, to be the bread for the world, not just to eat the bread of the world. And so this is a message that they misunderstand, and Jesus is trying to get them to see that. And for us, that's a question in our own lives. Because for me, as I was thinking about this bread and life and meaning and purpose and all of that, the question that kept coming to my mind is, when is enough enough? When is enough in your life enough? Because we're operating under two narratives here. One narrative is the narrative where Jesus teaches us and is trying to get us to understand that to live in a world is to be satisfied with the simple things of life. Simplicity can be abundance if one appreciates it. The touch, the food, the presence of people can be a celebration if one sees it as such. And this is what Jesus is trying to help us to see, that life in itself is beautiful and enough if we share it and live it together. But there's another narrative out here, and the other narrative is that you don't have enough and that you will not have enough if your neighbor has more than you. The other narrative tells you that you cannot consume enough because the more you consume, the more you need. And so that has been responsible for the destruction of our earth, for the destruction of relationships, for the abuse of women, for the abuse of all living creatures. Because we feel we don't have enough. We need more cars, we need more food, we need more houses, we need more clothing, we need more cosmetics, we need more computers. And so this is a narrative that Jesus is competing with. This is the narrative that we today are competing with. Do you have enough in your life? Do you feel satisfied with what you have? Or is your meaning determined by ownership, by possession, by control of things and materials? Is that what our life is about? What we can hold on to, what we can take, what we can possess? Or is our life grounded in the simplicity of observation? Simple meals and sharing of conversations with friends and families. Being together, experiencing moments together and sharing that. This is the central issue that I see in the text today, the bread of life, simple barley bread that gives you not just life, but purpose and meaning and beauty and communion. And yet we live in a world that's never satisfied. We live in a world that is constantly hungry and desperate to get more. constantly competing with everybody else to try and wreak from them what they have. And this is where we have poverty. This is where we have destruction. This is where we have wars. Because at the foundation of that is greed. And this is the very central gospel message that Jesus brings against that narrative. That you are enough. You have enough. Pay attention to the things you have. I challenge you to look at your closets. Okay? Open those closets up and say to yourself, do I really need all this stuff? Look at your shoes or look at your book. I'm terrible. I have books left and right, and I say to my, and I can hear them. You know, when I walk in my house, the books flap, and they say, Willie, you promised to read me last week. You're not reading me. And I have to go like this to the book and keep walking because I don't want to see it. There are so many things in our house that we got because it was impulsive, because we just were, the colors tintillated you, and you just wanted it. But you see, that creates a whole set of dynamics. That creates a chain of exploitation and production and costs and labor and all of that that may not be necessary. Now, I'm not denying the fact that you may need stuff and that you may enjoy stuff, and that's true. We all do. But at the fundamental core of who we are and how we live, are we just consumers? Are we just people who use things, eat things, and throw them away? Or are we people who have relationships with things? Do you know, have you ever seen kids play with toys? And they're playing with a little toy, a little girl plays with the doll, or a little boy plays with a truck, or whatever it came out to be. And then they get a new one. This is an interesting time to watch what's happening to the child. Because the child, when you give them something new, they can do two things. They can either keep the old one next to them because it has some meaning and history and memory, and include the other one, or throw the truck away for the new one. That says something. A child can throw it away because he's so anxious for the new one. That old one means nothing. That is a perfect time for us to see what's happening to that child and to see the meanings that he's picking up in terms of relating with things. Have you ever thrown something away and you really liked it so much that you actually said thank you to it? I mean, that's a bit weird. But it shows something, that you had a relationship with your shoes. They walked with you everywhere you went. You know, they were up on the mountains with you, went through the hills, they went to church, they went out to movies, and you're just going to dump them in the garbage like nothing? Don't you say thank you, shoes, for the great memories? And it's almost sad to part with it. Because we're relational people, my God. We're not just products that we take and throw away. And that is at the heart of the way we live our lives. And this is what the gospel is against. It's trying to wake us up again to the reality that we're more than just what we eat. We're more than just what we wear. We're more than what we have in our banks. And so that's why Jesus hid in the mountain. Because he knew they were going to take him away and make him king. And then the interesting thing about it is that in this gospel, the idea behind signs, Jesus will do a sign and then he'll give you a discourse and then he gives you an explanation. That's the pattern in the Gospel of John. But in these two stories, these two epicopes, these little stories that we get, feeding of the people and the walking in the water, there's no sign. There's no sign. Jesus comes walking on the water. He doesn't explain anything. What happens? They're frightened, right? They see Jesus coming and they're frightened. And he says, do not be afraid. It is I. And then they struggle to get him in the boat. Because they know you need Jesus in the boat. You need him in the boat because that is where your salvation is. You need Jesus in the boat because that's your meaning of why you live. Jesus in the boat because that is your guide through the ocean. Jesus in the boat because he will be your life raft. And so he puts these two together, John, brilliantly. And we get that Jesus teaches us to be the bread of life. And you read it in Deuteronomy 7 somewhere where it says, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of God. Because we need to have meaning. Viktor Frankl, one of the survivors in the Jewish camps, who wrote the book Logotherapy, and also wrote the book A Meaning Towards Life, or A Will to Meaning, he survived the camps, not because he was able to steal bread. He lived and survived the camps because he had meaning. He had something to look forward to. He had a purpose in his life. His vision of life was greater than the circumstances that he found himself in. His love for truth was greater than the animosity and the tragedy that was right before him. He saw beyond that. He was able to include and incorporate that. And he was in touch with reality and truth, which let him live. So the point I'm trying to understand is how we can shift ourselves into grounding ourselves in meaning, a meaning for life. Many people have a meaning for life based on what they see on TV, or based on what they read on some fantasy book, or based on what some group will tell you. What is your meaning for life? What are you living for? You know, for the next comfort? For the next Chardonnay that may come out, that is the brand new one on the block? Or are you living to look and see the wonder, to see the beauty, to discover things? Last night, because we were in a group yesterday with Nancy, and it was a wonderful retreat, we had several people, and it was absolutely a wonderful experience. But I think Margarita, somebody told me that Judi Dench put out a movie, a documentary about trees in her backyard. So I went and I looked at it. And Maria and I sat there for an hour, enchanted about what's happening with trees. Do you know trees talk to each other? Do you know that trees feed each other underground? Do you know that a tree is being attacked, the other tree will send a message to get some kind of bugs to come and eat the attacker? Do you know that they lift up the little trees that don't have water? You can hear the water running through the trees. This is life all around us. And she says, I've been walking around here and I have been dumb to the beauty of what's happening. And we're walking in the world blind to the miracles of everything that is around us. We have to stop looking at the world as object and see it as subject. See it as other, as thou. Open your heart to it and it will speak. I mentioned in the retreat, one of my first experiences, because Nancy had asked, what is your first experience about prayer? And I said, when I was about 10 years old, I was an altar boy for the Catholic Church. I had the key to the church, and I'd often go in there and sit down just to be quiet. And I heard two things. I heard silence and I heard noise at the same time. The noise was the background sound of the world, fire trucks and kids playing and all that stuff, a busy life behind me, and the flickering of the sound of candles. And Father Bob was there yesterday. He said, oh, Willie, can you really hear the flicker of the flame? And I said, yes, you can. Not only can you hear it, you can feel it. You can feel the move. You can feel the air. But you see, these are things that we have to pay attention to, make ourselves available to, lend ourselves to it. Not just build a life like a bridge over everything and go from one point to the other. Stop along the way. Smell the roses, drink the coffee, have a glass of wine on the way. But that's the meaning. And this is the bread of life that Jesus offers us, to come back. And he says this is true in the community, especially among us. This is where we find life. This is where we find truth. This is where we find real communion and celebration, in the good and in the hard. So take it to truth that you are bread. That if you are bread of life, people will eat from you, just like we eat from Jesus. And we become part of a larger reality, a big meal that becomes a celebration where it doesn't end. Amen.